Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is election night, Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. We're going to give a little rundown of some things that have happened tonight locally and nationally with the off-year elections here. It's Travis.
And Rachel.
And we got some stuff going on. We're going to probably bug you first with some local stuff, but some stuff that has gotten some national coverage. Besides just being local to the greater metropolitan Denver area, you want to start us off with what happened tonight?
Yeah, so the big issue in Colorado this year was actually in Jefferson County, the county that I live in, that got major national media attention was the school board election recall. Mm-hmm. The Jefferson County School Board has five members, and three of them were crazy, wackadoo, fringy, American for Prosperity weirdos who yeah. really pissed people off with some of their proposals. And so a recall was put on the ballot and we won handily.
We did. We kicked all kinds of major ass tonight. A little bit, I don't want to say surprising. It looked pretty good, but we crushed it. But let's back up a little bit, Rachel, and let's talk about the background of how this whole controversy started.
Sure. So these three people were elected, and it was Julie Williams, John Newkirk, and Ken Witt. And they were immediately got some pretty heavy fire from parents and local groups, unions, all kinds of people from some of the policies. Some of them were things like they didn't want to expand full-day kindergarten, particularly mm-hmm. in low-income neighborhoods, which, for whatever reason, money, I guess. They tried to push the unions out and propose performance pay for teachers and administrators, which unions hate, of course. They hired a superintendent named Daniel McMinimy, who had come from Douglas County, which is a really, really conservative county in Colorado. He had never been a superintendent before, and they proposed to pay him $280,000 a year.
Mm.
The previous superintendent had been paid $205,000, so it was quite a bump.
Yeah.
And that woman had like 30 years of experience being a superintendent. So people were so upset that eventually they reduced that salary to $220,000 with a $40,000 performance-based bonus.
Yeah.
The big thing, though, really, that people were upset about was this proposal to change the curriculum in U.S. history classes. And this is the thing that everybody got really fired up about, even in the national media. Their proposal was to revise the curriculum to, quote, promote positive U.S. history and heritage
yeah.
while avoiding material on civil disorder and social strife.
And so what are some examples of that, Rachel?
So the civil rights movement, for example,
mm-hmm.
A lot of the, nonviolent protests, that happened in the '60s, with Martin Luther King Jr. and a lot of that kind of stuff. But also things like Occupy Wall Street and, any kind of civil disorder. They just wanted to basically rewrite history and make it look like we were all lovely, perfect country that never had any racial issues or, social issues. And just sort of gloss that over and talk about how wonderful we are.
Right. And they wanted to rewrite some of the causes of the Civil War, as far
yes.
as I understood, and minimize the role of slavery.
Correct.
This is stuff that conservatives are always bitching about. They want to do this in every school district across the country. And in some places, they're having some success. In like in Texas, they actually have rewritten a lot of the public school curriculum to have this weird revisionist Fox News version of history.
Yeah.
But they tried it here, and people said no.
No.
And it became a big fight. They didn't give up easily to turn around, so there were recall elections, and now those people have been kicked out.
Correct. One of the big things that was of note that I was particularly proud of was massive, massive student walkouts.
Yes.
So a lot of junior high and high school students, not just like one or two days, but several, I think it was maybe like up to seven or eight times, had a organized walkouts where they just left class.
Yeah.
Some of the teachers did as well, and then they protested on school grounds, and that's what kind of picked up the national media attention. So during this election cycle, Americans for Prosperity, which we talked about a little bit earlier, actually came in and tried to fund the no on the recall because they are really big fans, apparently, of these kind of policies.
Well, because besides all like the minimizing slavery stuff and the civil rights movement, there was also like a lot of pro-capitalist propaganda that they were trying to push into the curriculum. And
anti-global warming.
Your typical buffet of Fox News vomitus.
Correct.
That they basically wanted to inject into public school curriculum.
Right. And recall elections in this state are particularly difficult. I think they are everywhere.
They're everywhere,
but especially in a non-election year, like a non-presidential election year. For an off year, people just really don't get engaged that often.
No.
And so I was surprised and really, really happy that they decided to do that. So that was really exciting. The people that replaced them were Brad Rupert in District 1, Susan Harmon in District 2, and Ron Mitchell in District 5. Unfortunately, Ron Mitchell's the only one that is a Republican. The other two were either unaffiliated or Democratic, but that's District 5. But still not going to be the same kind of
gross. Mitchell is not going to try to get away with what these people try to get away with. He's going to have to, it's a semi, at least toe the party line of normalcy to an extent. But this is exciting for us because this is the kind of thing that we are very passionate about, local politics, getting involved, not letting big, gross, corporate, conservative, special interests influence things on a local level, which they've been doing so effectively the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
And which is why it's such a mess right now, all over the country. And it bleeds into things like, redistricting and all kinds of other things. So this is a positive step. There was more good news tonight. Statewide and locally. Rach, you want to kind of fill us in on that?
Yeah, so there was, this has to do with recreational marijuana in Colorado. Colorado is a very messy state when it comes to taxes. And so because of Tabor, which we've talked about in a previous podcast, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, we have to vote on taxes a lot by constitutional law in Colorado. So what happened was we estimated how much revenue we were going to bring in from marijuana, and we underestimated, shockingly. And so what basically happens is the excess of taxes from what the estimate was, you have two options. One, we return it to the citizens of the state of Colorado, or two, we can vote to allow that money to be used for schools, which is what it was originally proposed to do.
Right.
But because
of the Tabor laws, this actually has to go on the ballot.
It has to actually go on the ballot and be voted on by the people.
But what's the catch, Rachel? What if it goes back to, quote, us taxpayers? How much do we get?
We get between $6 and $8 a person. Or $40 million into public schools.
Right.
So we won.
The
money will go back into schools. Yeah.
Yes.
Handily.
Handily.
Yeah.
Which we were a little worried about. We thought, are people going to know what this is about? Are they going to care? Are they going to show up? But
and it was written kind of weirdly. The actual question was a little muddy.
The language was a little muddy. Yeah. I even had to double check with Rachel. Like, okay, this is, I want yes on this,
you
right?
Want yes, right? Yeah.
But we won. We won handily, which is good.
And a lot of people were saying that this is kind of the test, again, of how kind of widespread public support is for legalized marijuana, and we just proved once again that the public is happy about it. They really do.
At least here. In another big state, it didn't go so well, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But anything else locally we want to talk about? The stock trade show for Denver.
Yeah.
They're going to support that.
They are,
so
yeah.
So you can have your steers in downtown
Denver.
It's
going to cost a bunch of money, but they're...
It does bring in revenue locally. I mean, I guess I understand both sides of it.
It does. There's some... I think there's going to be some repercussions for some of the surrounding neighborhoods and some gentrification stuff that's going to happen. And that stuff concerns me.
Mixed bag.
Yeah.
Kind of with that one. But I wasn't too passionate about it either
way.
No,
me neither.
Anything else locally we want to touch on? I haven't even checked the Aurora School Board stuff yet.
And I don't even know who won my mayor or city council, but I don't think anyone else cares. So I think we should, we'll move on.
Yeah. So now we're going to go and look a little broader nationally at what happened tonight. A mixed bag. Some good, some bad. But in a sort of in an off-year election where everything was horrible and puke-inducing and terrible in the last midterms, I think a mixed bag is an improvement.
Absolutely. Particularly because Democrats and liberals tend to not vote in off-year elections
in great
of numbers as Republicans do. So I think it's actually a really good sign for us. I'm heartened by the outcomes.
Well, let's talk about some of the good and the bad. The good first, you want to talk about the Pennsylvania is a little weird where they elect their state Supreme Court.
They do, which is the only state I think that does that. And I have some feelings about that are not positive because I do think the Supreme Court should be a non-elected, nonpartisan body that studies the law and determines what the law should be rather than kind of trying to ebb and flow with
I would tend to
getting
agree,
elected.
Although in this case, it benefits us.
It does. So they have there was three open seats on the Supreme Court, which is the first time in Pennsylvania history that that many seats had been up in one election. And right now, there were three Republicans and two Democrats. And so basically, we won. It was a clean sweep.
Yeah,
three Democrats won all three seats, which is tremendous and more than anyone kind of had hoped for.
And that's a big deal because Pennsylvania's had a lot of shenanigans in terms of voter suppression, voter ID laws. You had state representatives, Republican state representatives, openly saying, you know, we need to enact more voter ID laws so Republicans can win.
Yeah.
So that's good for a big – I don't know how much of a swing state it really is anymore. It tends to really lean pretty solidly blue, but it's still technically a swing state. And then some stuff in Ohio.
Well, before we get to that really quick, one of the things I wanted to talk about, why it's so important for people outside of Pennsylvania is because of redistricting. And we're going to see this a couple of different times tonight, but I thought this was a really interesting case in Pennsylvania. So the way that the lines are drawn is it's a five-person commission. The Democrats get to pick two, the Republicans get to pick two, and the Supreme Court gets to pick the fifth person, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Only because the Democrats and Republicans can never agree on the fifth person, so they just put it to the court.
Right.
So the court picked this guy, Republican retired judge, and when the commission, the Democrats and Republicans basically came to him and said, okay, here's our map, the Democrats said, and here's our map, the Republicans said, in open court, he said, thank you very much. I'm going to go with the Republican map. Didn't even look at the two. He didn't take them back
nakedly
into chambers.
Partisan.
Nakedly partisan.
Yeah.
And as a result, the Republicans in Pennsylvania have very safe House and Senate seats until 2021, which means it's been gerrymandered to the point that the Democrats stand absolutely no chance of
winning
until it
gets redistricted.
Until
it
gets redistricted, which is why this stuff matters.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Ready to move on to Ohio?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of interesting things happened in Ohio. The first one was a nonpartisan redistricting measure was on the ballot and won big. That sounds okay on the surface, but it's a little more complicated than that because ultimately it's gonna be up to the state house to determine, sort of like Pennsylvania, who's going to do what. So that step one is good, but step two is Ohio Democrats really need to show up in 2016.
Yes, because three people of the seven-person commission are going to be people elected statewide in that election cycle.
Yeah.
That's their way of kind of saying we're being as Democratic as possible.
Right.
And then the other four seats, two will be Democrats, two will be Republicans. So it's really important, that next step that people get out and vote.
Right. And as far as the statewide elections go, Democrats, we've been getting our asses handed to us in Ohio for a while. So really need to up our game there if this is going to – I mean, it could go either way. It could screw us or it could really help in terms of fair redistricting there. But something that we thought maybe would have had a chance got totally killed tonight.
Yeah.
That's the recreational marijuana was up on the ballot and got beat almost 2-1.
It's recreational and medicinal. Yeah, both.
Yeah.
And it just got murdered.
It got murdered. Now, part of that was there was some bad wording, and apparently even some potheads didn't like the wording because it was something with the government control wording was in there too much.
It was like two different laws. So one was to legalize, and the other one was this really strange bill about whether or not you could put something on the ballot that you would personally economically gain from, because there was some talk of the only people being allowed to grow were like going to be controlled by the government or something.
Yeah,
and
it was a really mess. Sketchily worded to even where I think a lot of potheads were like, I don't like the sound of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
it was not anytime you put the words government control in too much, everybody gets skeezed out right or left or otherwise. So maybe they'll learn something from that and learn to word it, or these pot laws are not going away. They're it's inevitable, especially when you see the tax windfall in a place like Colorado.
Yep.
It's coming. It just may not come at the rate we want it to, and Ohio's a weird place too. I've talked about that before. Ohio and apologies to any people out there from Ohio, family in Ohio. Ohio's a really awful, miserable place in a lot of ways. I've known some people from there, and they're just like, they're just grouchy and miserable. And
yeah, it does seem that way.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't the greatest state to pick as our next test case for the marijuana legalization activists.
No, but I was surprised it popped up there. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it definitely, we did not win that one. So that was unfortunate.
No. What else we got?
More bad news. If we want to talk about Houston. There was a anti-discrimination ordinance, that was passed by the city council in May.
Yeah.
And, Texas. So people got really upset about it and they put it on the ballot as a referendum. And it lost, so that anti-discrimination ordinance will be repealed.
There was also a down-ballot effect to that because of the mayoral race. I think there were like 3 Republican candidates and 2 Democrat candidates, and then the Republicans kind of split the vote evenly, so in large part there were more Republicans on the mayoral ballot, and that may have played a part, but that doesn't surprise me. I've given up on Texas a long time ago, basically.
I
lived in Houston and San Antonio, and we have friends that
are Katie.
In Houston. Hi. And yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me, even though they had an openly gay mayor.
Yeah.
But she
mayor
came out
Parker.
After she won re-election.
Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty gross down there. I mean, it's the stuff you hear, all the bathrooms, with the obsession with the bathrooms. I don't understand.
I don't know. It's very silly. But you have a lot of very silly people in Texas, especially like the governor and the state attorney talking about Jade Helm and
and
child molesters are going to come into the bathroom and molest your kids. I mean, they're very juvenile, silly, six shooting spittoon
fear-mongering
people down there. So
ridiculous. Yeah.
I never get excited about any big progressive change on any ballot in Texas. This is why I completely gave up on Texas and urge everybody who lives in Texas to get the hell out of Texas as soon as humanly
Please.
Possible. And ironically, Rachel will be visiting Texas in a couple
I'll
of days.
I'll be in Dallas in a couple of days. Yay!
To Dallas, the cradle of the start of the Southern strategy for Republicans.
Yeah.
If you listen to the Sam Seder podcast, which I did today.
Yeah. So Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was kind of the leader of the opposition to this anti-discrimination ordinance. And they started papering the town with signs that said no men in women's bathrooms.
Right.
And they,
guess they weren't Ally McBeal fans, huh?
I guess not. They sort of said, well, because Mayor Parker is gay, there's no reason for this anti-discrimination ordinance. She's just trying to push her, quote, gay agenda, of course. And then the people supporting the anti-discrimination ordinance came out and said, you know, remember when Indiana had that passed and there was such blowback and fiscal blowback? And they were making the point that, you know, we're a contender for Super Bowls and all kinds of stuff. And
we need to not look like a bunch of dumb rednecks.
Exactly. And
well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about, gay rights and equal rights and trans rights politics. This isn't going away. And these roadblocks that get put up always get trampled over eventually. And it's not good politics anymore, except on a very small micro level, to keep doing this crap. So
winning.
Yeah, it's easy for me to say from a place of privilege being straight white dude, but this is another blip on the radar for a overwhelming tide around the country of this getting pushed back and washed away.
Yeah, we will win.
Yeah.
It just takes
it's
a
inevitable.
Minute. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Another one that I have just a quick note about was there was an animal trafficking law in Washington State that I was following because it kind of, I think, is going to have an effect on not only people who keep wild and endangered species as pets and sort of that whole nightmare and what happens to those animals, but I think it's a little bit more overreaching than that. I think they're going to eventually try to go after things like SeaWorld with the orcas and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be harder because, you know, those are corporations and have money and lawyers and lobbyists.
But that law did pass that it's illegal to traffic in endangered species. And the penalty was pretty extreme. So I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting as well.
Yeah, and then moving on to Kentucky, some sort of bad news there. I had a feeling this was going to happen. They showed Matt Bevin is a crazy, super right-wing Tea Party jackass running for governor, and he had been showing consistently trailing by a couple points in the polls in the last 2 weeks, but I didn't think that was going to hold up. I had a very strong suspicion he was going to win, and he won handily.
Yeah.
In Kentucky, as did most of the down ballot races there. So Kentucky, not surprisingly, stayed very red.
Yeah.
And the AP kind of twisted it as, oh, this is a big rebuke on Obamacare. This is really bad news for Democrats. It's like, no, it's effing Kentucky.
No.
I don't think anybody was counting on Kentucky as a bellwether for Democratic hopes in 2016. I'm disappointed, but not the least bit surprised that Bevin is going to do his thing there, and maybe he'll try to do a brown back and turn it into Kansas, and won't that be wonderful for Kentuckians?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll love having their economy completely trashed.
Yeah, but Allison London Grimes held on to her seat as a state attorney general, and
which is good.
Yeah, there was another hold there, so it wasn't all terrible news, but not surprising. Kentucky is still Kentucky.
Right.
Same with Mississippi for the most part, although they were saying, I think Mississippi, they expected more carnage because of redistricting shenanigans, and Republicans pick up a bunch of seats. They picked up a few, but held on to a few, so it wasn't all terrible in Kentucky. The other really bad news of the night, and I'm sure my friend Molly will know about this, is that there was hope in Virginia that the Democrats would be able to gain a majority in the state house. That did not happen. Everything stayed status quo, so it's still 21-19. So there's still going to be a lot of fighting in Virginia because you have a lot of crazy right-wingers there.
Yeah.
Really bent on things like horrible voter IDs laws and shoving wands up of women who want to have abortions, sticking wands up their vaginas for no good reason.
Yeah.
And restricting abortion and all that other crap.
Yeah.
So status quo in Virginia, unfortunately, we have a lot more work to do there.
But so, yeah. Good news out of New Jersey.
Yes. The good Governor Christie and his effect of being a complete pariah in his own state and insisting on keeping his failing presidential candidacy alive had some effects tonight.
Yeah.
Where they lost, I don't want to say a bunch of seats, but a few more than they expected. And now there's almost a supermajority, I think, in the state house for Democrats.
Yeah.
Where they can actually start really buttressing up against some of Christie's crap that they haven't had the votes to veto yet, is
right.
The way I read that.
Yeah, me too. And that it was surprising that really people didn't think he'd have – I mean, we can't blame it all on him necessarily, I guess.
I do.
But I do. And I think it goes to – speaks to his presidential campaign. Like, your state hates you and Republicans as a result. And, you know, New Jersey's not – a totally blue state. It's kind of a weird state.
Yeah, it's got its pockets of conservatism. But,
yeah.
You know, and his Bridgegate stuff is not over yet either. He keeps bellowing that it's over, so the media kind of nods and says it's over, and then, oh, guess what? It's not over.
No.
It's not over.
No.
I don't think he's going to actually go to prison, but it's – spoiler, Bridgegate's not over.
Yeah.
But his presidential campaign, for all intents and purposes, is, yet it still is a thing.
You know, interestingly, I was talking to my Republican father after the debates.
I have one of those, too. What a coincidence.
Yeah, I know. What a coincidence. I really wanted to sort of see the other side and see what he thought about the debates.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of, and then he said, you know, all you guys care about is domestic politics. But what I'm concerned about is international politics.
Okay.
And I said, okay, which is not true, but all right, I'll hear you out.
Yeah.
And he said, I was sitting there watching all these people. And what I wanted was to see somebody up there that I think could stand up to Putin. And I said,
okay.
I said, so you want the bully? And he's like, yeah, basically I do. I do. I want the bully in chief. And I said, okay, so let me guess. Trump and Christie. And he was like, exactly, Trump and Christie. He's like, exactly. He's like, I'm looking at Marco Rubio. Putin, he's going to eat him alive. I'm looking at Carly Fiorina. No way he's going to care about a woman. I'm looking at Ted Cruz. Guy's the Weasley. I don't know. I'm looking at Ben Carson. Like, no, I don't think so. He's like, it has to be Chris Christie. Or Donald Trump.
Okay.
And I said, do you really think Chris Christie stands a chance, considering all that bridge stuff and being a very faithful watcher of Fox News? He said, you know, all that Bridgegate stuff is just a red herring.
There's no way
any of it happened.
Okay.
It's all being blown up by the liberal media.
Sure. Okay.
And then he quoted, was it Rubio who was talking about the media being the super PAC?
The super PAC,
yeah, that was a huge thing, which we kind of called that would be a winner for them. But
here's the thing, Dad. The folks in New Jersey who were stuck on that goddamn bridge for hours and hours trying to get their kids to school.
And the emergency vehicles who couldn't get through.
They
and...
don't think it's a red herring. And that is why, the main reason, Chris Christie is as popular as testicular cancer in New Jersey right now. And he's losing his ass in the States. Yep. But that's, you know, who cares? The fact that there are Christie supporters out there still, God bless you.
And I thought it was interesting because last time I talked to him about Christie, he was all, nope, never, ever, because he hugged Obama or whatever. And I guess the other candidates seem as ridiculous to him as they do to me sometimes, I think. And so... Christie and Trump.
Yeah, I'm not sure what my dad actually thinks because he at this point he can't even do anything but sort of coat it all in a thick layer of jokiness about what a joke the whole Republican field is, even though he will vote for a Republican.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of just sort of is supporting Trump for the entertainment factor at this point. But he's also I think he's also deep down resigned to the fact that whoever they put up against Hillary is going to get absolutely slaughtered.
Yeah.
But, you know, he faithfully voted for Bob Dole, and he faithfully voted for W against Clinton. And
my dad even said, he's like, you know,
faithfully voted for John McCain.
I don't like any of them particularly, but whoever they put up, I'll vote for.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, I'm the same way. I mean, I actually my candidates, but it doesn't, I'm not going to vote Republican, and he's not going to vote Democrat.
I voted for
Kerry.
I voted for Gore, although I thought they had a chance to win, and they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess this is a good pivot. I mean, we haven't gotten all the news from tonight, and I'm sure there's more interesting state-by-state and local stuff that we'll get to on the next podcast. We just kind of – we came back from a movie about the Cold War, incidentally. Very good movie.
Really good. Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies. We highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot has happened since our last podcast. Let's do a recap of what's going on nationally.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan is the new Speaker of the House.
He's already
taken a lot of flack from all sides, mm-hmm. which I guess he could have expected.
Yep.
He came out the other day, I think it was just yesterday, with a big anti-immigrant stance. I forget exactly what he said, but he kind of went back on his whole talk earlier. You know, he was trying to get bipartisan immigration reform through, and now he's completely against it. So he's towing the party line already, trying to cover his flank to not get put in the Boehner position like in his first week from the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
So there's that.
He did make a bipartisan deal, though, for not shutting the government down.
No, he says he had nothing to do with that.
Well... he's taking credit for it.
Right. Well, he'll take credit for it and he'll renounce it, you know, if things go bad.
Yeah.
But I guess we should talk about that before anything, right?
Yeah. The debt deal or the – not the budget, I guess, right? Budget deal?
Okay. Yeah. Boehner and Obama got together and hatched a deal, a framework of a deal to fund the government through 2017.
Yeah.
There is a caveat, however. This is just the budget framework of a deal to actually pass the individual parts of that still has to go through Congress, and there still could be fights and there still could be shutdowns on the horizon.
Yes.
Some of the immediate stuff is taken off the table, like the debt ceiling fight that would have come up like tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like that's not going to happen. And,
right.
But we could still have fights in December and we still could have shutdown.
And I just heard somebody the other day say that the Planned Parenthood thing, they're still really pushing to shut the government down over that.
I don't think they have enough ammunition to shut the government down. And Boehner has tried to sort of outflank that by putting up another bogus special committee on it to try to quell some of that.
Yeah.
They're still going to rant and rave about it, but I think even Paul Ryan the other day said
it's not
a thing.
Nope.
Forget it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're not going to make a lot of noise about it, but I think any actual fear of defunding Planned Parenthood is probably not realistic at this point. Of course, any of it would get vetoed by the president.
Exactly. Anyway, he's already said in no uncertain terms, I will just veto it.
No,
so
but they're gonna keep riding that as much as they can to keep the base fired up and to keep them engaged and to make sure they come out and vote for whoever in 2016.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll see how Paul Ryan does. I predict kind of a total shit show, but you know.
Yeah, I think he's being a little naive. It's really hard for me to imagine he's going to keep these crazies in line and go along with funding the government, raising the debt limit, signing off on an infrastructure bill, all these things that need to be done, and the Freedom Caucus Tea Party people just kind of sitting back and saying, we don't like it, but okay, because Paul Ryan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see that happening at all. I also thought it was really good, you know, his whole thing about, I need to spend more time with my family, and that's like my whole thing. And some women's groups came out harsh against him and said, so you should get to spend more time with your family, but you do not support paid family leave.
Right, exactly. And yeah. He said no, but that's different because Paul Ryan. Because
I'm a congressman and I don't know why, but I thought it was a good point and something that, you know, he should answer for. All of them should.
Well, there's still a lot of blinders. I mean, obviously in the Republican Party, we're going to get to how completely out of control they are based on the way they're reacting to this last debate. But, I think the media, too, has still got blinders on into just how ridiculously on the wrong side of everything the Republicans are and how that is going to bite them in the ass mercilessly in 2016. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was the debate. We podcasted about that. And we saw a little showmanship in theater, you know, yelling about the moderators.
Yes.
And we thought, okay, whatever. But no, they took that to the nth degree. Ooh. And met afterwards. And
yeah,
oh man, the shit hit the fan, and they threw Runt Priebus under the bus,
and they cut all ties with CNBC, and they said, we're never having you do another debate again.
The RNC isn't going to control the debates anymore. They've all gone rogue.
Trump is negotiating privately with the networks, and then
oh my god,
this lawyer that the rest of the candidates hired, I guess not Carson. So Carson and Trump are going rogue. The other 10,000 of the candidates are hired this attorney who drafted this letter with this list of questions for the networks to answer about, will you promise to not do these things? Will you promise to do these things?
It's a clown show. It has turned into a complete clown show and a fiasco.
Crazy.
And they're really boxing themselves in into dangerous territory here. They don't see it yet. And Cruz, being Cruz, went as far as to say, hell, let's just have Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the ghost of Joseph Goebbels do the next debate.
So much.
Right. But,
oh, my God.
And Republican people like my dad are fist pumping and cheering that, not understanding that when you have a debate with people that are considered to be serious candidates in a general election and they start asking these really crazy, horribly homophobic, anti-immigrant things.
Conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
They're going to make themselves and the whole party look as nuts as they are.
And I think the Rince Priebus may be like the last person who understands that and is trying to, you know, keep the ship from completely sinking.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're just ready to throw him overboard and say the hell with it. And like the echo chamber is almost like completely sealed off from the rest of reality at this point.
Yeah.
And it's just getting worse and worse. And the media is just kind of shrugging and kind of going along with it like it makes sense.
But if you've listened to Rush Limbaugh or any of those people anytime recently, which most people do not.
Yeah.
You get them on national television. I can't even imagine.
And directing those conversations.
It's going to come out of their mouths. And then the candidates are going to have to play along or fight back. And then that's going to piss off the base. I mean, it's going to be beautiful if they get
I am so shocked and stunned at where the power structure and I've written about this the last couple of years. Is there any such thing as an actual Republican strategist who understands maybe what it takes to actually win a presidential election at this point?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that the groupthink and the echo chamber is just tightening and tightening and tightening. And it's been amplified and made worse by the fact that what was considered the rest of your establishment candidates are flailing and falling by the wayside. Yeah. And it's Carson and Trump leading the pack.
Yeah.
This is bad, guys. People love when progressives say what is wrong in the conservative movement, the Republican Party, like we get shrugged off.
But
and that I understand that. But at the same time,
we are not wrong.
this is not going to end well for you guys.
No, I've told them too. Like the people in my life that are conservative, I will tell them like your primary process is a problem. You know, there's all of these things that are problems, and it's like, what am I trying to sabotage you? Like, I'm just pointing out facts. I'm pointing out actual facts of the things that's going on in your party, and you keep losing. So
yeah, and they just canceled, I think, a debate with Telemundo, right? Which was sort of their last gasp at reaching out to the Latinos, which they're going to need somewhere upwards of 35% or 40% to win. And they've just basically said, F you, we don't need you.
Yep.
So they've, I mean, what is it at this point? Is it even a party that's actually trying to win an election at this point, or is it a bunch of individual grifters trying to sell books and diet pills?
And get people frothing at the mouth and... And I don't know. I honestly like
it's hard to imagine Ben Carson is an actually serious presidential candidate.
And he's
like he could actually win.
Officially leading the polls now. Yeah. He's above Trump. He is the number one.
And
right now.
Donald Trump is the number two. And a very distant third, I guess, is Rubio.
Yeah.
And Bush. But, oh, Jeb. Jeb. Jeb can fix it.
Jeb can fix it. That's his new campaign slogan. he's going on a little tour, and that's literally what it says. Jeb can fix it.
This is also a weird thing where, and Democrats do this too, but just people, older people in general, think they have an idea of how social media works, and they don't. And it
how
always
to make stuff go viral.
It always hilariously backfires, and they but they just keep doing it.
Yeah, like they. I'm almost like, are you trolling yourself at this point? Yeah, but they aren't. They really think this is going to be great. And
then this is the future. This
the
is
internet
how it
happens,
works.
And they go, just, what happened?
You just launch a hashtag, and then everything will be great.
And then we just mercilessly troll you.
There's too many people like us out there to turn it around on you and make you look silly.
Yes.
Don't you understand that?
I know. But yeah, Carson is one for me that as everybody knows how I feel about Carson. But I just think about him on a debate stage with Hillary.
Or anybody.
Anybody. My niece. and it's wonderful.
Conventional wisdom is still, if you're listening to the Beltway Press, Carson's going to flame out eventually. It's like, I don't know. I sort of get the feeling that Trump and Carson are bulletproof with their base. There's really nothing crazy enough they can say that's going to sink them in a GOP primary race.
I know.
I don't know.
I don't either. Especially not in,
And
I don't know.
Carson has just gone full, he's full evolution denying, climate science denying, gay hating,
crazy,
everything.
Fringe.
Yeah. And there used to be a time where even the GOP base who liked all that generally wouldn't vote for it because they said,
they couldn't win.
But now I think they've had enough and they're like, screw it, we're all in on our guy.
I guess.
So let's see what happens with that.
I mean, if he is the flavor of the week, then what? Then who's next? I struggle to really find any candidate that is going to make the base happy that can win in general.
Yeah, they're all flawed, right?
I just...
Bush has got so many ingrained problems with the base.
Uh-huh.
Rubio was for immigration reform. I still don't know how he gets around that. Although, I know Romney did, even though he invented basically Obamacare.
I know. Well, he didn't. I mean, he lost, so...
Well, yeah, but he got the nomination.
Right. Which is why I really wonder if somebody like Jeb isn't going to still get it, just because the base does seem to... kind of at the last minute, after they've had their fun with their, like, fantasy political team or whatever.
Yeah, but Romney was never this far behind. McCain was never this far behind.
You're right. I know.
You know,
he's at, like, 3% or something. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's down there. It's down there. And they didn't like McCain, and they didn't like Romney.
No.
They probably disliked McCain even a little bit more than Romney, I think.
Yeah, because
Romney at least was a rich guy who was
very
much, anti-handouts, as he called it.
Right, and McCain was always a little bit more, mavericky, right?
He was a war hero, and that used to count for something, but not so much anymore.
Well, Donald Trump just got to call him, like, straight up not one, because he was kidnapped. Anyway, I don't know. I just look at them, and I think, if it's not Ben Carson and it's not Donald Trump, who?
Rubio, I guess, ish.
Oh, God, he's too green. He's way too green.
I get that sense, yeah. There's always something weird about Rubio, just he's not quite sure of what he's saying.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he could catch fire and be the guy and then just start, once we get into the primaries, just start racking up the delegates and be the guy, and then he's smart enough to be formidable to Hillary or whoever else. But
and if he has the entire RNC and the entire Republican Party prepping him, and he's got the very best and brightest that they have to offer. Maybe they prep him enough that he doesn't completely flounder, but I...
Sure, but the way things are going now with the far right and the echo chamber politics, I don't know if he can even emerge and be a serious establishment candidate at this point. That's become so anathema to what the base wants. It's like we're just kind of figuring based on past history, but past history keeps getting ripped up and
yeah, it does. This election, burned. Especially, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they try to apply that to both sides. I don't think that's so true on the Democratic side, no. But certainly on the Republican side.
And really, all we have left now is Hillary, Bernie, and Martin O'Malley still hanging in there. I got a fundraising email from him the other day.
From Martin?
Martin O'Malley.
Oh, good times.
And it said, I didn't know who it was from, which campaign, because the headline was Clinton only at 6%. And I'm like, what? That's not even close to true. So I opened it up, and he was making reference to Bill Clinton's first campaign. And at this point in his first campaign, Bill Clinton only had 6% of...
So he's actually comparing himself to Bill Clinton.
Correct.
Yeah, Bill Clinton did have a really huge comeback. I remember that vividly, actually. I was only about 15 or so, but it was the Jennifer Flowers was the first shoe to drop in terms of Bill's affairs, yeah. Right?
Yep.
And the mainstream press was just like, okay, this guy's done. You know, he's finished. Because historical precedent had said, yeah, that's what happens. You get in a big sex scandal and that's it. But he wasn't, and then he came back, and then he just completely took over.
I was too young to remember.
But it was a weak field besides it. The next guy was like Paul Tsongas, who was not a very dynamic candidate.
I was not old enough to remember that. I remember the
election,
but not the primary. I was like 9 or something.
Yeah. No, I remember they wrote him off, and then he came back in South Carolina, and then he kind of took over from there. But he had that folksy Southern kind of, you know, mm-hmm.
He's a good communicator.
He's a good communicator, yep. And you know.
Yeah, but I don't think Martin O'Malley. I mean, it's cute, but
No. Martin O'Malley has no charisma whatsoever, and certainly not the charisma of Bill Clinton.
No, and he's up against two powerhouses, so he's out.
Well, he's angling for a VP spot. Yeah. He might be an intriguing VP. I think they could do better than him, but he he's a white guy.
Yep, yep, white dude, straight white dude.
He's a white dude. He's popular in the Northeast, although the Northeast is kind of on lockdown for the Democrats anyway.
Yeah, they probably need a Southerner.
Or a war hawkish guy or something like that, you know, or if they're worried, if Rubio's the guy and they're worried about covering their Hispanic front, then maybe
what about one of the Castro brothers?
One of the Castro brothers from San Antonio who,
yep.
So there's a lot of options there, but we're not done yet. And look, Bernie's not done yet. Certainly.
No,
he's got a big hill to climb. But he's still in it, and we're still going to caucus for him, and we'll see what happens.
I know. I'm a little more on the fence, like I said, just because of the Benghazi hearings. Watching her made me love her, and she knows everything, and so I'll probably still caucus for Bernie, but I got a lot of love for Hillary right now.
She's badass, and, yep. And it's not a coincidence that she's able to do this. She's very skilled at what she does, and I think she's been pretty light on her feet and dynamic here in terms of learning from her mistakes in 2008.
Yes,
and moving forward.
Yeah, agreed.
So we'll see. It's not nearly as interesting on the Democratic side right now. It just isn't.
No. Well, I mean,
we're
kind of
settled
is...
into two main candidates.
Nothing could possibly compare to what's going on with the Republicans, though. Like,
no,
it's so
insane.
Crazy. Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to say was Hillary just put out the ad attacking Bernie Sanders on gun control.
Okay.
It wasn't like a super attack ad. It was just a sort of like, hey, did you know that he is kind of weak on gun control and he voted against this law and that kind of stuff. Really the only issue there is for which she can go to the left of him, and she's taking advantage of that right now.
Yeah.
And he came back and did the round of morning shows and talk shows and all that and said, you know, that's not how I feel, and that's not accurate, and I do support the things that Americans support broadly. But he hasn't really reneged on some of the stuff. You know, Martin O'Malley's gun control plan was really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie does not agree with parts of it. And he doesn't say that he does, but he does say, you know, I support the things that the majority of Americans support.
Yeah, really, though, we're getting into policy nitpicks at this point.
Yeah.
you know.
There's nothing else. We pretty much agree on everything else.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of space.
No.
Right now. On the Republican side, there's probably some more-ish.
Well, they're willing to just make shit up.
Well, sure.
And say crazy stuff, so.
And there started, yeah. You know, there was a lot of, it was kind of interesting. I felt sort of like, it's a little bit of camaraderie where you had, okay, well, now we can all gang up and turn on the press.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're starting to turn on each other. And even the National Review had to come out and say Ben Carson is full of shit. He totally supported this snake oil garbage that he was called on during the debate.
Yep.
And then he had to turn around and say, well, that's one of the campaigns is in bed with the National Review. And the shit slinging is really just getting started.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Bush is going to hang around, he's going to have to sling some major shit. He can't just sit there and sort of take it and then have a half-hearted attack at Rubio and that's it. I mean, he's going to have to go after Trump. He's going to have to go after Carson. He's going to have to go after everybody.
Yep.
And show why he's a better choice than these guys.
Right. And he is not doing that right now. He's really just, like we said, sitting there going, I hope I look like the reasonable guy that I am. And,
they don't want reasonable.
They don't. And he's getting lost in the shuffle. I mean, my dad straight up said, like, I do not want to support Jeb Bush. Like, I'm not. Nope. I don't trust him. He seems weaselly to me. He is not a good candidate at all. And I was like, I agree.
And that's the problem. And you almost wonder with Carson if it's a kind of thing where they think we're stupid. His supporters are kind of like, yeah, this guy, he's all for this crazy right-wing, radical, ridiculous shit I'm into. But look, he sounds so calm, and he's a black guy.
He's black.
So he'll.
So we'll get the black vote.
We'll get, or we'll get moderates or something.
No, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
No.
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 But
the next debate is going to be November 6th. I will be in Dallas. And that's the Democratic debate with Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that because Maddow asks really good questions.
Yeah.
Really good, well thought out, tough, substantive questions.
Right, like we talked about last time. Exactly. Like when you watched her interview both Bernie and Hillary, she didn't go easy on either of them, and I don't think she will.
If the Republicans were smart, they'd have Maddow do their debate because she'd actually highlight some differences and actually have the cream rise, and you'd actually learn something about the candidates, maybe.
And, and she's respectful. Yeah. She's not going to call them comic book villains or whatever. So, be really good.
No, but so, and then, okay, so I, you know, I've kind of been lost in all the grandeur of the crazy headlines. So when is the next Republican debate? And you know,
I don't know anymore. I don't know if they know. I don't know if they know what network it's going to be on. I have no idea. It's all like under negotiation. They pretty much threw out all the contracts because they're hyperventilating about being asked questions. And so this list is not really a list of. Well, it is. It's kind of a list of demands in the form of a question, like Jeopardy, I guess.
Now, let me say, some of the tone and the way the questions were asked by CNBC was kind of Bush League and juvenile.
Totally.
But you don't overreact to that and blow up the whole primary process over
and just not have debates or what?
Or have horrible kangaroo court debates that really make you look like clowns.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't know where they're going with this and what they hope to accomplish.
And how long is it going to take? Are we going to wait 3 months to have the next debate before negotiations are done?
I don't know.
I mean,
it's
that's
like
what Trump was saying. He's like, I'm not going to wait around for this. I'll just negotiate with them directly.
Just have the Trump show?
Yeah. And the other campaigns, I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Bush, came out and said, you know, kind of, that's not fair because then if he negotiates it, then he can negotiate himself the middle thing in more time. And
it's fascinating right now,
isn't
it?
It's crazy. It's
you just never know what's going to happen next. And it's better than Aaron Sorkin could write. It's just nuts. It is complete anarchy in the Republican Party right now.
Yeah.
They're sort of denying it. But I mean, you know, at least they got one of their bases covered when they blackmailed Ryan into taking the speaker position. That's one thing. And Boehner got him off the hook, sort of, by agreeing to this big deal where you're not going to have all these crazy shutdown fights. So those are two really helpful things. The problem is the base doesn't see those things as helpful.
No. It's turncoat and giving in and –
Yeah, I think what's left of the Republican establishment and the strategists at this point just kind of hope it all works out, where you have the remaining factions that realize they have to govern, and then the other faction that wants to just burn everything down and shut everything down, and that hostage taking will get them everything they want.
Yeah.
And I still don't see how these two meet and make it work. And I don't see how it works among this crop of presidential candidates. And
no.
I certainly don't see how it works in the Congress. And all these things are going to come to a head.
And for your general voter who doesn't follow politics super close but knows kind of the Republican Party is a mess and they're pretty obstructionist, why on earth would you vote for a Republican for president when you look at how they govern in Congress and you think, like, they can't even agree with each other? They're constantly battling.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get anything done. Obama can't get anything done, obviously, but
well,
they can't
get,
even agree with each
some,
other.
Some things done. Via executive actions and,
sure.
and some other things. But, you know, it's kind of interesting when you look at what's happening, you know, in terms of is the idea to govern or is the idea to just burn it all down, and the base wants to burn it all down if they don't get everything they want.
Yep.
So what is the platform ultimately going to be if there's a front runner? And, you know,
I don't know.
Where does this all go?
Yeah,
And
do they know? Does anyone have a plan?
Well, to make matters much worse is they don't learn from their mistakes.
No, they're like doubling down.
Right, right. For instance, some numbers came out about the result of the Benghazi committee.
Yeah.
And it was all good, as you suspected, it was all good news for Hillary Clinton and bad news for the committee and the Republicans.
Yep.
But they just cast that off and say it's liberal media bias.
Yeah.
And they want to keep pushing ahead.
Yeah.
So they,
it's nuts.
They just double and triple down
yeah.
on everything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's crazy to me. I thought it was crystal clear that she owned face at the Benghazi hearing. And
the American public
saw it
that way too.
The American public completely agree with me.
Yeah.
And then again, dinner with my dad, and he's like, she looked like a mess. She was avoiding all of their questions. She looked untrustworthy. And I'm looking at him like, did you watch the same thing I watched? And he's like, you're being naive, and you're just seeing what you want to see.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, well,
right,
well
and he'll ignore the numbers and
yeah,
say
it's liberal media.
It's liberal media bias. Uh-huh. And they'll push ahead with that, and uh-huh. they'll probably put Cecile Richards back up there. And
sure, why not?
Maybe they'll do another contraception hearing with a bunch of old white men.
Yeah, let's get some rape victims in there and then accuse them of, you know, asking for it. And I mean, let's just that's
go
just,
all the way.
Yeah,
right?
Why not?
I mean, that seems to be where we're headed. You know, I guess Paul Ryan is sort of the last hope for maybe some reasonable governing politics. But, you know, at a certain point, they're going to turn on him, too.
Yep.
Now, he was able to get some of the rules changed where it's going to be a little tougher to do that.
Yes.
But not impossible.
No.
Not impossible.
Not impossible.
I mean, it really would have been the end of days type of thing had they gotten like a Dan Webster or a Jason
yeah.
Chaffetz or somebody
yeah.
like that a speaker.
Yep.
And they just would have gone whole hog right into shutdowns and hostage taking and
absolutely.
Madness.
Yep. They did themselves a favor making him do this.
Uh-huh.
But
they bought themselves some time at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, if the idea is that Paul Ryan is going to govern, that he's going to pass budgets, he's going to raise the debt ceiling, he's going to sign infrastructure bills, you know, he's not going to impeach Obama and he's not going to defund Planned Parenthood. They're not going to just sit on their hands and say, okay, well, it's Paul Ryan. It's not Boehner doing these things.
I almost wonder if everyone's just going to look at them and go, shut up. There's only 40 of you. There's more of us than that. We can win without you. And so yell and scream all you want.
No, they're not, because they're all afraid of being primaried. They have to go along to a certain extent. it's a mess.
Crazy.
It is a goddamn mess. I would not wish being a Republican strategist right now on my worst enemy. Good luck figuring this out, guys.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck.
We'll be here to watch.
So I guess we better find out when the next Republican debate is and what that's going to look like. And
if they know yet. I honestly don't know if they know.
Yeah.
So as soon as we have that information, we'll share it. But I honestly, I don't even know if the one that they already had scheduled is still on or not, because they pretty much ripped up all the contracts and said, we're not doing this. We're gonna make all these demands. And so I honestly don't even know if that one's still going. So we'll have to find out.
Yeah.
In the days to come.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to talk about quickly is some of the stuff that's been happening, racial issues, particularly the black high school student mm-hmm. who was brutally assaulted by a school resource officer.
Yeah.
So there was a video of this assault. She was sitting in class, and there was some kind of altercation with the teacher, and he asked her to leave, and she refused. And so a white officer came over to her, and three of her classmates had recorded it on their cell phones, and ripped her out of her chair, threw her against a wall, handcuffed her, and arrested her, took her to jail. And it was truly horrifying to watch, really, really, really upsetting, nauseating, and also just blood-curdling. And because there was all this cell phone footage, it went viral, and the media picked it up, and the sheriff's department acted pretty quickly.
They fired him.
They did. They fired yeah. him, and the Department of Justice stepped in, and so the sheriff's department will do their own internal investigation, but also the Department of Justice is going to come in and do theirs to see if there's any criminal charges, which I think there should be, beyond losing his job. I mean, he assaulted a minor. I don't care if you're a cop. That is...
Assaulted a minor without cause, without any indication of defense or protecting anybody else.
Nope.
And it was just an uncooperative, sullen teenage girl who was refusing to get out of her chair.
Correct.
And got thrown around like a rag doll.
Yep.
And that's not okay. And being a former substitute teacher who has had to call security on unruly kids, I can identify with a frustrated teacher or a frustrated school resource officer, but this just so obviously went so over the line in so many ways, it's not even worth trying to defend or discuss.
No.
You know.
And one of the things that you and I talked about when it happened, and some of I heard it on Twitter too, was the reaction of the students and the teachers. So this is a classroom made up of, from what I could tell, exclusively black students.
Or mostly, at least.
Yeah. And a black teacher. And when this white officer came over and started assaulting this girl, everyone stayed quiet and still. And you think if that would happen in a white school, that may not have been the case. But the black community has been so oppressed and beaten down by mm-hmm. law enforcement, and the trust is so broken that I honestly think, you know, the impulse is don't move, don't say anything, or you're next.
Well, for clarification, one girl did stand up and be like, you know, WTF are you doing? And she was initially arrested for something, but they later dropped the charges. And three kids filmed it.
Yeah.
Which means they didn't expect, like, this guy to just come in and gently take this girl out of class. And
right.
Then, like, they were filming for a reason. They knew something might happen.
Right.
And they were
That's true. Yep.
And they were right. So, you know, kudos for being vigilant as far as that goes.
But so sad to it just breaks my fucking heart, and it makes me so angry.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully he'll get some justice, criminal justice. I really would like to see him charged with a crime.
And then the National Review, being the National Review, the next day had a big story on their lead. Their big center square story was, oh, yes, we can win the black vote. And then a little where next to it said, like, the school resource officer was right to, you know, do whatever to this girl. It's like there's a little cognitive disconnect there, you think, goodness. Maybe. Or maybe you just think people are very stupid. Either way, that's a fail.
Awful.
And that's what you get.
And Obama was then later at a conference of law enforcement. I don't remember exactly what it may have been the National or Fraternal Order of Police. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Giving a speech and being very like, you know, you guys do such a great job and thanks for your service and all that kind of stuff. And then he pointed to a study that was done that unequivocally with science and numbers and data said that there's absolutely a racial bias in policing.
Sure.
There just is. And he said, you know, we can't ignore this. This is not an isolated incident or incidents, even the ones that, not just the ones that make the national news and cause protests, but this is a systemic problem across the country of racial bias in policing, and you have got to start addressing it.
Well, we keep hearing it over and over again, and they seem to think it's going to filter in to the public at large, but it, like everything else, it's going the other way. When you had Henry Louis Gates arrested for trying to break into his own home at Harvard.
Right.
And then we're expected to side with the police. When you see Eric Garner murdered for selling loose cigarettes. When you see Michael Brown shot.
Trayvon Martin.
I mean, it's over and over and over again. And there's this sort of disconnect where they think they're in the right and we shouldn't be pissed about it. And
never question law enforcement because right. they have hard jobs and it's right. dangerous and we should trust them. And no. It's wrong. It's racist. And
it is galvanizing people across
it is.
Racial spectrums.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think the last gasp of suburban white America who is just going to always side with the cops and is going to be afraid of gay people and is going to be afraid of black people and... you know, this is a dwindling circle.
Yeah, it is. They're getting smaller and smaller.
Still has a lot of political power and clout, and, mm-hmm. and politicians will still run on it, but mm-hmm. it's going the wrong way.
Yeah, it is.
For them.
And, you know,
but they're not going to change course.
Our generations are certainly on the right side of history on mm-hmm. these things. It's just a lot of the, like you said, older suburban, scared white people that can't quite empathize. It's that famous empathy gap.
Yes.
Until it happens to someone that they know or they're personally affected by it, it's not a problem. And since they're not black, that's going to be hard to do. But I think you're right. It's a dwindling population, and eventually, hopefully, we'll see some real change.
Sure. And every time they talk about outreach, they give up on it 5 minutes later. Because the base throws a hissy fit and says, how dare you talk about amnesty?
I think they know how to outreach. They don't even understand what the problem is or why people are so upset. It's not like we're upset because one cop did one thing or...
No. It's a systemic thing that goes on and on and on and on. And more to that, people who are a little more introspective like us can sit back and realize, like, this is the shit we've seen because it was filmed.
Exactly.
Imagine
right.
everything that yeah. isn't filmed and yep. isn't reported
yep.
and isn't seen. And yep. we understand that's reality.
Correct.
So.
And from our place of privilege as white people, I think it's important for us to talk about it from, you know, not from a perspective of we understand what it's like, but from acknowledging that it's a problem in white culture.
That it's there, and you know what? We are not okay with it either.
No.
Even though it doesn't affect us. We can get in our cars and drive down the street, and we're probably not going to be harassed and fucked with by local cops. But the right. fact that other people are, just because of their skin color, is not okay with us.
No, and it is a problem that white people need to fix.
Yes.
It's not up to black people to fix this problem. It's up to white people to fix this problem. It's our problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and that doesn't mean we're guilty, that we feel guilty or responsible or whatever. It's just this: we see this happening to other fellow human beings.
Yep.
And we are not okay with it.
I'm enraged by it. Yes.
Yep. On that note, yes, so we are going to continue to push people to get involved locally, politically, and yep. obviously nationally. And
if you guys had any important state or local election results that impact you or that you want us to talk about, shoot us an email at irreverenttestimony@gmail.com and we'll try to address some of those.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, a lot of you are going to go to the polls and vote for a president. There's a lot of important down ballot stuff. Do yep. the research and learn who else is on there and make an educated vote.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying vote party line, but, you know, there's stuff that doesn't even have to do with party. There's ordinances, yep. there's initiatives.
Yep.
There's stuff that's determining where your tax dollars are going to go for things that will affect you, like schools and medicine and
yeah.
science and all kinds of important stuff.
Yep.
And the big money is just going to throw some ads out there, and the big money is probably going to be against what you support because – the big money usually is.
Yes.
So pay attention, vote down ballot, and get involved locally, and then we can turn the tide on a lot of this crap instead of just complaining about it into a vacuum.
Exactly right. Yep.
All right. Well, this has been our election night coverage of Irreverent Testimony. We'll be back. We're going to be some of us out of town, so it may be a week or so till we're back on the stick, unless I just want to yammer on for an hour and a half by myself, which I've been known to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, stay tuned and stay informed and stay involved.
Bye.